types of attributions we are discussing now. Dispositional attributes. It refers to the internal factors of one's own or others' behaviors, including intelligence, personality traits, ability, motivation, etc. Disposition. He is of this disposition, we say, this is a type of makeup he has, this is a type of mental makeup he has. So that is an attribution coming out of your own internal characteristics. Next is situational attributions. It refers to external factors, availability of resources, education, etc. We don't have too many people around us who are educated. Attribution. As if education is everything that matters for an employment. Situational attributions, okay? Then we have the Kelly's model of attribution, which we are discussing now. Kelly's model suggests factors on which people focus while making casual attributions. We know a lot of people who make casual attributions. So we are discussing two or three of them. Consistency cues. If a person behaves in the same way in different situations, that behavior is viewed as consistently similar. The reasons are internally generated. Varying behavior from poor to excellent may be viewed as outcome of external factors. If a person is punctual at the workplace, he's punctual in a wedding, he's punctual in a party, then we say that this person is by and large punctual. It's consistency cues. Cue is a hint. Consensus cues. Consensus means, consensus is behaving in the same fashion as others behave in the same situation under the same circumstances. When a person behaves differently than expected, it is usually due to internal factors. You go to a place of worship, you're supposed to go dressed in that fashion as a worshipper, and you must do the actions which other worshippers do. So if you do this, they'll say, he's a nice guy, he is religious. Many people do this. They create consensus cues and people attribute, he's a pious guy, he's like this, he's like that. Distinctiveness cues. Distinctiveness refers to the extent to which the same person behaves in the same way in different circumstances. Different strokes for different folks. With every group of people, every individual, he'll be talking the way that person needs to be talked to. In order to do so, a person must have commitment, intelligence, adaptability. Distinctive cues is one of the good things to cultivate. It's like you, who's convent educated, who talks in English all the time, and you're landing up in the cab and you're talking English to the cabbie. It doesn't make things happen. Can you talk to the cabbie the way the cabbie needs to be talked to? Can you go to the restaurant and talk to the restaurant, the waiter, the way he understands? That is distinctiveness cue. Relating to the person and connecting to the person on a one-to-one. Right? Fundamental attribution error. We tend to measure behavior of other people through their internal characteristics rather than external environmental factors. This fellow is always negative when he talks. Internal characteristics. External environment is, he is living in a place where the external is impacting him a lot. Of course, he has a choice to come out of it. But we make judgments. So the internal characteristics is what we normally try to draw out, and we start making slotted opinions about them. The fundamental attribution error is a tendency to underestimate the impact of external causes and overestimate the impact of internal causes of a behavior. The other way around can also happen. I am blaming the external causes all the time and not looking at the internal causes. Now, both have to be weighed with each other. A brilliant boy may not be performing because of the external environment. The external environment is extremely supportive, and we have a very dull boy who's performing because he's getting all the encouragement, or we think he's dull. So it's both impact with each other. Now we talk about distortions. People distort what they see sometimes, or they avoid seeing the reality. This is not deliberate all the time. It just happens because of the way we perceive. In one type of training which I do, we talk about three different types of filters, mental filters that happens. Generalization, distortion and deletion. We generalize things, we delete certain aspects or information about what we see, and we also distort. This is one of them. This happens when people do not like the situation, or the situation is contrary to their expectations or against accepted social values. This is again not deliberate all the time. It can be happening straight away subconsciously because of the way you are perceiving it. Projection. Projection takes place when people assign their personal attributes to others. If I am having negative thoughts about some person, then I'll start saying that he is also negative, everybody else is negative. So usually people project their attributes in the opinions they pass about others. Be aware of it. Punctual people assign punctuality to others. Is it not true? Right? Similar to me effect. This is like you are like me. People tend to perceive others similar to them when others have one or few characteristics similar to them. I like this food, he also likes it. I like this actor, he also likes actor. So we are similar. This is the clubbing that happens with people. It's an error. Because suddenly you'll find his individual self comes out and you'll say, oh my God, how is it? You start feeling bad about it. These characteristics include work habits, values, beliefs, intelligence, skills, demographic factors, etc. First impression error and primacy effect. There are many people who say first impression makes the last impression. I don't know how many of you believe in it. I, for one, feel that first impression is making the first impact. That's all. Because the first impression, if you're going to carry as a last impression, which some people do, it's a very disastrous thing of dealing with people, according to me. In my experience of dealing with people, we form first impression or opinion about others when we meet them and interact with them for the first time. First impression perception may be positive or negative, and impulsive behavior of people makes them draw conclusions which may not be the reality. I still remember a friend of mine, he is a good friend of mine now. We met about almost 18 years, 20 years back. And the first interaction was a stormy interaction. We met at some place. We didn't know each other. It was very stormy. Now we are good friends, but when we talk over dinner or something, he keeps reminding our first impression was that, you know, you were like this, you were like that. I said, yeah, maybe I'm like that. I was like that. It's okay. He carries it. I've forgotten it, but he reminds me, our impression, first impression was such. Now get this very clear. You and I are doing it. Right or wrong is not the question. Let us pause. First impression was not good. Second may be better. Provided I'm willing to perceive it differently. Provided I'm removing my accuracies and inaccuracies and barriers. First impression was fantastic. Second need not be. See, remember one thing. We all go through a roller coaster of behavior. And since we go through roller coaster of behavior, if you behave nicely to me today, tomorrow, day after, it doesn't mean you will always be nice to me. Let me accept that. Because there are some drivers within you that makes you behave that way. That's why I keep saying, don't say why he did this, why he is behaving this way. Ask this question, what is making the behavior happen? What is making the behavior happen? That makes a lot of sense to you and me. The what is what makes us sometimes moody, sometimes euphoric, sometimes melancholy, sometimes happy, etc. Self-fulfilling prophecies. There are people who say that this is going to happen. That's a prophecy. Predicting something. And it actually happens. Somebody whom I know, driving a car, he met with an accident. After about few months after he learned driving. So his self-fulfilling prophecy is already planted in his brain. I can't drive. If I drive, there'll be an accident. And he sits on the wheel. A few months later, there's again an accident. Twice, thrice it happened. He's attracting the particular incident by his thoughts. Self-fulfilling prophecy is behaving towards others in consistency with expectations about them. So when he is going in the car, He always has got this fear that I'll get into an accident. His behavior is accident prone. So he gets that. Self-fulfilling prophecy. Pygmalion effect. From the famous book written by Bernard Shaw, called as Pygmalion, which later became a movie. Positive and high expectations would result in high job performance. I believe in Pygmalion effect. Now, it's a story about a professor who spots a girl selling flowers somewhere in the outside. And he looks at her as a society woman, as a person who can be groomed to become somebody who can be like, she can really see places. His friend tells him, are you gone crazy? She's after all a person who's selling flowers on the road or the station, wherever. Now he believes that she can do it, and he starts coaching her into making her believe that she can do it. A good coach, a good motivator has to firmly believe, it may sound foolishly optimistic, that everybody can do it. And the reality is that everybody can do things. It's the role of a Pygmalion effect to ensure that the person's expectations are kept high so that the person who's getting coached is able to perform. See, I believe in you so much, it'll make you believe that you are good. It rubs off. That's Pygmalion effect. Next up is Golem effect. The negative view of potential and low expectation will result in low performance. Just the opposite. Hey, you can't do it. You're no good. Keep on giving the strokes and the person will actually start losing self-confidence. Self-fulfilling prophecies. General case. Managers form expectations of subordinates. Managers behave consistently with expectations. And managers' behaviors affect subordinates. Even when they delegate work, so-and-so, no, he won't do it. Don't give it to him. So that he's already decided he won't give it to him. And once when he gives it to him, again the goof-up takes place. He'll say, see, I told you now. This is what happens. Subordinates respond to how they are treated by managers. If my manager starts looking at me as no good, then I also respond as a no good. It goes back. What goes around comes around. In Pygmalion effect, I've already explained, managers form positive expectations from subordinates. Managers give emotional and professional support. Managers add experience and boost confidence. Subordinates show high performance. This is an empowering manager, a manager who brings out excellence in you. The Golem effect forms negative expectations of subordinates. Managers withhold emotional and professional support. Managers do not add experience and boost confidence. And subordinates show low performance. Just the opposite of Pygmalion effect. Other perceptual errors could be recency effect. People normally remember recent events. See, events that happened 2-3 days back, 1 month back, we remember. And they perceive things based on recent remembrance and ignore the total information. What you did to me now, I'll remember and I will start sulking if it's negative. Projection bias. Some people believe that others also view and behave in the same manner as them. Thus, they defend their beliefs, behaviors and actions that lead to bias. I don't trust people. Let's say there's a person who says, I don't trust people. He or she doesn't trust people. And that person will show that others don't trust by their actions. Okay? How to perceive better, accurately? Know oneself more accurately. Assess and know others more exactly. Be empathetic. Have positive attitudes. Enhance self-concept. Learn to be self-aware. Take efforts to reduce perceptual barriers and have open communication. Avoid attributions. Develop multiple dimensional point of view. See the same thing from different angles. Get complete information. Avoid distortions and bias. Control internal factors. Make rational decisions. Now we come to perception in the organization application. I've spoken quite a bit about it during the discussion. I'll run through it now. Perception in organization setting directly or indirectly affects employee performance, customer service, product design and quality, financial performance, corporate image, etc. Perceptions can produce positive or negative results. Mainly perceptions affects performance appraisal, Impression management and corporate image. Performance appraisal is a method, as all of us know, of evaluating the behavior of an employee at the work. It includes qualitative and quantitative aspects of the job performance. Performance is measured in terms of results and not efforts. Unfortunately, I would say. Because you are doing efforts, the efforts are not seen, they are invisible. People look at results. It's a systematic description of a job relevant accomplishment and failures, and the purpose is to find how well the employee is performing and establish a plan of improvement. They are arranged periodically and according to a definite plan. I'm not commenting upon performance appraisal as a process. There's a lot to be spoken, but this is not the subject on which I'm going to talk about it. Okay, but remember one thing, this is being discussed here to tell you how perception plays a major role during performance appraisal. Perception affects measurement and comparison with standards. Superiors' expectations rather than actual performance standards influence appraisal. Perceivers' characteristics affect performance appraisal in the form of rating biases. Perceivers' biases could include halo effect. I'm sorry. Perceiver depends excessively on rating of one trait rather than all traits. Error of central tendency, perceiver plays safe by rating all employees around the middle point of the scale and avoids rating at extremes. This has been taken from the HR book and is being told here. Okay. One is halo effect. Second is error of central tendency. To be on the safer side, I always give middle ratings. So continuing further, the perceiver's bias during a performance appraisal, one of them is leniency and strictness. Either he's too lenient or he's too strict. Again, it is his bias. He wants to play it safe or he wants to be very demanding. Personal prejudice. Maybe they have some personal issues between the two of them. That dislike may come in the picture. Recency effect. Something that has happened recently may influence the performance, the appraiser to look at it differently and not objectively. Now we come to impression management. The purpose is to regulate or monitor what others perceive of us. There are two words, perception and projection. Impression management is about projecting. How do I project? So everybody is into projection in the organization. Everybody wants to project that I'm the nicest guy. I'm the most sincere employee. I'm the most star performer. Everybody would like to do that. So employees present themselves in acceptable manner to their superiors. This helps in higher rating in performance appraisal or consideration for promotions and salary hike. I don't believe in this totally. Just because I'm presenting myself, I don't have to get appraised. I must really do a good work. But this is given a weightage by certain people. Impression management strategies include, there are two types of strategies people usually follow. They enhance positive behaviors and they reduce negative behaviors. So, if something is conducive to the environment, they'll keep on doing that more. And if something is not conducive behaviorally, they will not do it. In doing this, you know what they do? They take what is pleasing, but they don't take what is objectively important for the goals. This is more of a social skill people are into. It doesn't always help the management to grow in terms of goals and results. Employees hide weaknesses, dissociate with troublemakers, apologize for their mistakes, associate with positive impressions, impression makers. Now this is common in organizations, and this actually leads to a illusion as if everything is okay, and people don't speak out when things go wrong. When you really want to take a critical analysis of how to make the company go better, nobody is willing to talk about weaknesses, troublemakers, mistakes, etc. And somewhere the top management has also to understand that they have to promote people to talk objectively, and they must create that culture. That's very important. When that culture is not there, these things happen. Impression management during job interviews, dressing and speaking well, describing oneself in a positive manner, describing past events to make oneself good, you know, marketing oneself, opinion conformity entitlements, expressing beliefs that are assumed to be held by the target, So they know that this company would like to have people who are working 24 by 7. So you start saying, 24 by 7 is good. This is all nothing but trying to sell yourself. Making statements that are that flatter praise or compliment interviewer. Oh, that's a nice tie you're wearing. All these things are a part of things which you should be doing, but people do it. Corporate image. Organizations also create a positive image to impress stakeholders. They use annual reports, advertising campaigns, publish achievements to impress the prospective shareholders and customers, and they create employer brand to attract, utilize and retain talent. This is again a part of perception. So here I am covering learning. Learning, as I told you earlier, is all about acquiring knowledge, information, data. And the purpose of learning is not to just get knowledge, it is to convert it into action, into skills. So learning is a change in knowledge or observable behavior that results from practice or experience. People acquire new competencies, skills, knowledge, values, beliefs, etc. after learning. All learning may not result in performance. Ultimately, the information that you gather during learning, the knowledge that you gather during learning, has to be converted by you willingly into action. That's why I said in one of my earlier modules, what's learning? It's basically nothing but it's about developing skills. And what are skills? Skills are nothing but information plus repeated actions. Information plus repeated actions gives you skills. Performance needs motivation to use learned knowledge and competency. If I want a person to keep on doing better and better in the organization, obviously he should be the learning types. And he must be a person who is willing to learn, unlearn and relearn. That's very important. It's a continuous process learning. People learn through experience. Learning occurs step by step. And repetition is required to improve skills. That's the most important part of learning. Keep on repeating. There is what is called as a mind-muscle connection. Something goes into the mind and becomes a memory for the purpose of future repetition only when physically we repeat it. Physical repetition brings about a memory which can be replicated into further action. Opportunity must be created for people to exhibit their abilities and knowledge acquired through learning. Okay. What sort of a climate you need for learning? It should be conducive to hold attention and interest of the learner. Not too very pleasant, not too very harsh. A push is important. It should not be very pleasant, otherwise people will not get the motivation to learn. There should be excitement of doing something different, achieving something, and making the person feel good that he has achieved it. The climate consists of working conditions, relationship with teacher, the coach, freedom, social interaction, etc. It should be an atmosphere which is making the person go ahead in terms of social surroundings as well as the physical surroundings. Conducive climate requires an ideal physical and psychological environment. Learning problems include lack of knowledge. It's not a problem, it's something from where you come. Lack of knowledge, skill, aptitude and attitude. Existence of certain anti-learning factors. Now, anti-learning factors could be factors into which you're not giving importance to learning and developing. You're caught up in something else. There could be some psychological problems which you must be having because of which you don't want to learn, you can't learn. Unwilling to change. Rigid person, absence of motivation, lack of interest of results, inability to convert learning to operation. There are certain guiding principles as far as learning is concerned. One of them is motivation. Every learning needs a motivation. We have a test, we have a presentation, or we have an encouraging word to be given to the student. All this makes the learning effective. Training must be related to desires of trainees, such as better pay, recognition, promotion. This is far-fetched. What's important is that the person has to first develop the need to learn. All the recognition, better pay will eventually come when he displays the behavior. Progress information. How are you progressing in your learning? that information helps the learner to learn better and more effectively. Reinforcement. Whatever you have learned, you must be able to strengthen it. And there are two ways of strengthening it, either by rewards or through punishment. Two types of motivation theories. In one, what we do is, if you do this, I'll give you this reward. In the other one, we say, if you don't do this, I won't give you this, I'll withdraw this from you. So, people respond to both of them depending upon the situation. Right? Practice. Repetition. The trainee must actively participate in training programs. Continuous training practice in various forms must be provided for every element of the job for better learning. Full versus part. If the job is complex, it should be broken down into parts. And training should be done for parts and then the whole job will be done together. So whatever is complex, make them into parts and start building it up by doing each part complete. Individual differences. During group training, trainer must adjust the program to the individual abilities and aptitudes. Like I said before, different strokes for different folks. Each person in the classroom is different. So we must be able to adapt the teaching methods in such a way that practically everybody is able to get it in the way he or she gets it. Learning involves change. Change must be relatively permanent. Change in knowledge should bring change in values and attitudes and overall behavior. And learning is based on experience. Now we cover what is called as a classical conditioning theory of learning. Classical behaviorists believe that stimulus elicits a response. There was a gentleman called Ivan Pavlov who conducted experiments with dogs. He gave them a meat by ringing a bell. Then he slowly removed the meat. The bell kept ringing. And what happens when you keep a meat in front of a dog? It starts salivating. The meat is a purpose, is a cause of salivation. It's a stimulus that creates a reaction or the response called the salivation. The bell was just associated with it incidentally. After some time, the dog started perceiving both of them as one system. When the meat was removed and the bell kept ringing, even then the dog salivated. This is what is conditioning. So in the behavioristic theory, we got classical conditioning theory, operant theory, A and B. Then we have the cognitive theory and third one is a social theory. The first one I have just explained, classical conditioning. It's called a stimulus response reinforcement strengthens behavior. It's called a stimulus response theory and reinforcement strengthens behavior. That is a role it plays. In the operant theory, it is called as response stimulus theory. It involved a certain experiment done by a researcher by name B.F. Skinner. There was a box in which a rat was made to grow through a long path, labyrinthine path. At the end of the box, there was a small piece of food kept there in a lever. And when you press the lever from outside, the food fell down and the rat ate it. So this was done number of times. During one of the journeys of the rat, it smelt, it got excited and its paw touched the lever inside the box where the food was kept. And the food fell down even before pressing the lever from outside. Now this became a cue to the rat saying that all I need to do is to press. It developed an intelligence. If I press, I may get food, I may not get food, but what's the harm in pressing? This is called as trial and error learning, which many of us go through when we are young. Some people do it even after that and they face the consequences. That's a separate story. Cognitive theory of learning. The meaningfulness strengthens behavior. So in a cognitive theory, what do? We are learning by watching the various elements around us, which gives us a impression about a meaningfulness. There's a table on which I mentioned earlier, four elements are kept and I get a meaningfulness of that this is a classroom. Now I change the elements, I put some three, four other items. My cognition has to be redefined again. This happens in physical settings as well as in your work functions. Your home, the furniture is laid in a certain manner, isn't it? You get used to coming home habitually and you sit in that sofa which is close to the door. One day, the furniture is rearranged and you walk home in the evening. And the place where the sofa is kept, you find that something else is kept. It takes time for you to recognize. So, same thing happens with your work functions. You're holding a particular job in which you're doing certain functions based on certain understanding about the reality. Then you're given a job change. So you have to go through a complete, your cognition process has to change. I was in production. In production, we had a certain type of a cognition I had. When I went into marketing, when I went into market research, I had to change my cognition. That's the learning I had to go through. Social learning is social skills strengthen behavior. So, learning by looking at others is social theory, social learning. You're a person who wants to eat Japanese food, you go to a Japanese restaurant, they use only chopsticks. And you do not know how to use chopsticks. So, you look at a person who's using chopsticks and by trial and error, you start doing it. You're going for a dance, you do not know how to dance, you watch someone dancing, then you learn to dance. So, many things we learn socially also. So, these are the three types of theories that come into picture. Behavioristic theory is so-called because they say that when you learn something, it shows in your behavior. Cognitive theory is so-called because whenever you learn and you acquire skills, it shows in your thinking process. So, whenever you learn something, it shows in three aspects. Your behavior, your thinking process, and the social interactions. Okay? Principles of learning, law of effect. Responses accompanied by satisfaction are more likely to occur than those accompanied by discomfort. If you do something for the first time and you've done it well, you feel happy, you'll feel like doing it again. Reinforcement is the act of rewarding. It encourages learning, it may be positive or negative. It gives you that push towards the skills building. Positive reinforcement means strengthening the behavior and repeating the same behavior with desirable consequences. Contingent reinforcement indicates that the reward will be delivered only when desirable behavior is exhibited. I'll give you this provided you do that. You give me that result, then I'll give you this, not before. Rewards can be given continuously or at different schedules. I can give you the reward before and tell you to perform. I can give you the reward somewhere in between to further push you, or I may give the reward at the end. Negative reinforcement strengthens the behavior and repeats the same behavior but by termination or withdrawal of the undesirable consequence. It is also called as avoidance or negative consequence is avoided when, as negative consequence is avoided when undesirable behavior is withdrawn. A youngster has done extremely well in 10th. He's getting into science because he wants to do engineering. And when he gets into, when he's in the junior college, he's expected to do better. So when he was in 10th and he did well, his father promised him a bike. He wanted one and he did very well. He got a bike. He got motivation by rewards. Now in the 10th, in the 11th and 12th junior college, instead of studying well and going ahead, something happens. He comes down in his grades. He doesn't get into engineering. So now the father wants to discourage him from going wayward out of the studies. So he puts him into a punishment motivation. He will withdraw. He might withdraw the bike. That's called as withdrawal. That's called as reinforcement by withdrawal. Motivation by withdrawal. Very, very painful it is. Or he may say, he must have promised him that I'll buy you a car or something or some other item which he wants. And he'll say, nothing doing, you will not get it till you drop this behavior. Till you drop this behavior of not studying, not scoring, I will not give you the car. So that's why it is called as avoidance or negative consequences avoided. Punishment, it's undesirable but sometimes inevitable. It may produce unintended results. It may not change behavior permanently. It may offset effects of positive reinforcers. Administrator of punishment is viewed as a villain in most cases. See, always remember one thing in mind, friends. Always, always, always. Remind people that you're addressing the behavior, not the person. I keep repeating this as a trainer. always you are punishing the behavior, not the person. And the person should be made to understand that the moment the behavior is changed into something resourceful, you'll be okay, everything will be fine. And to that effect, when I'm punishing someone, I'm not punishing that someone, I'm punishing the behavior. When I say punishing means, I'm changing the behavior by harsh means, because it's not working. I tried soft means, it's not working. I tried a little harsh, it is not working, then I have to be harsh. What most people do is, they just ignore and they say, nothing doing. They don't punish, they allow the thing to happen till it becomes very dangerous. Now punishment is not bad. Punishment of a behavior is important for that very individual who changes. So please ensure that you are addressing the behavior, not the person. This is my contention with as far as punishment is concerned. That's a last resort. You should never take things to that level. In case it has to happen, punish the behavior and do it so well that the dignity of the person is retained. That's a skill which few people know. Extinction. It is an attempt to weaken undesirable behavior by attaching no consequence or ignoring it. It's like ignoring something. Now, ignoring a negative behavior, I wouldn't recommend, because that will one day become a very dangerous thing for the team or the group that is undergoing that. So this is something that they say, if you ignore, it will vanish. It might vanish, but who knows, it might not vanish. In the topic of conflict management, we talk about, if I ignore a conflict thinking that it is very small, that very conflict takes a very big position in the later date. So don't ignore an undesirable behavior, address it and then finish it. Sometimes employees do not respond to positive and negative reinforcements and punishments, hence extinction is the only alternative. Extinction, by the way, friends, might lead to isolation, and isolation can lead to more dangerous behavior. Okay, that's it, friends, in this module. Thank you very much.